This morning, all of you were deliberating on very important things. But using the language of physics, you were dealing with what I would call, quote-unquote, local matters. I would like to spend a few minutes, just a few minutes, I assure you, viewing the scene at a global level. There is a very important reason for my doing so, because one is the micro and the other is the macro. Whether we like it or not, the micro is related to the macro, and the macro influences the micro. I am going to say a few words about the macro, and basically I will be quoting three or four people, very eminent people. I start with a reference to a book entitled Consumptionomics, written by Chandran Nair, who now lives in Hong Kong. His point is very simple. Essentially, he is telling us about sailing on desires. But he doesn't know that Swami has used this zillion years ago. And he gives an economic argument. His point is the following. The combined population of China and India is about 2.8 billion. If, say, half of them, 50% of them, 1.4 billion, want to drive cars like they do in America, then there's going to be a problem. The population of America is 320 million. And 1.4 billion is something like four times. And today, the 300 million consume 25% of the world's oil. Now, if India and China try to imitate America, there is not enough oil in this planet. So he says this is not a very wise thing to do. And the proper thing for enlightened leadership is to disabuse people of this unrealistic and unreasonable desire. And instead provide what you call buses, public transport, etc., etc. But nobody is going to accept this, because they will scream murder. They will say, if they can do, why can't I do? But facts are facts. Next, I would like to refer to a book that has just been published, Why Nations Fail, if I have got the title right. It's written by two authors. I don't know the names of them, but I know one of them is a Turkish gentleman. He's a professor at MIT, professor of economics, and it is creating a lot of waves in economic circles because they avoid standard economic theory. And they explain inequity purely by considering the sort of quote-unquote political system in the country. They give many examples through history, starting from the Roman Empire and all that. One of the current examples they give is North Korea versus South Korea. They say in North Korea, a few hold the power. The rest are left to themselves. The few grab everything, and there is great inequity. By contrast, in South Korea, there is a so-called democracy. Net result is, the average income in South Korea is 10 times that of the average income in North Korea. And so it is in Nigeria, which is rich in oil, but there is a lot of poverty and so on and so forth. And then he was asked about America. America is tending towards great inequity, which is very surprising. It has never happened in its history. And he was asked, is America going to fail? He said, no, American constitution is such that if the people are determined, they can get back the power. So in other words, he was giving a political analysis. I won't go further into that. The next book I would like to refer to is, if I'm not mistaken, the title is Ascent of Money. It's by a Brit named Niall Ferguson, but actually he's a professor at Harvard. He's very distinguished. He's a professor of zillion things. And he's also a member of the business faculty. He's a very great historian. And he says, Western civilization is about to crumble. It has no chance. Bluntly, he says that. I've heard him say that on many interviews. And what is the reason? He says, we are not sustaining institutional values. What does he mean by institutional values? Shared sacrifice. He said the concept of shared sacrifice is disappearing in America, and America doesn't have a bright future, and all countries which imitate America are destined to the same fate. Lastly, I would like to make a reference to David Bohm. He is a brilliant physicist. He is no more. And I am skipping one or two points because I would like to go into Q&A. And he was intrigued by the philosophy of quantum mechanics, and recognizing its inadequacy, he began to develop or extend quantum mechanics. And interestingly, he leaned very heavily on Oriental concepts of holistic approach. In other words, he was echoing Vedanta, let me put it very simply. And he had read a lot of Vedanta. He had written a book in which he says, it is in the nature of mind to create problems. And the mind can never solve the problems it creates because it will create more problems. And I am drawing attention to this because today the whole world is trying to use the head to solve the problems, which is created by the head. So what do we do? Is there any solution? Well, there is a magic wand, but I am not going to talk about it. Hopefully, you serve the dessert always at the end, and I will save it for the end. Right now, I will hand over the mic to the Vice Chancellor for his opening remarks, and after that, I am at your mercy. Do you want to say anything?
Right.
So, he has passed the buck to me. So, now, I pray to Swami to protect me. Oh, go ahead. Who is going to have the first shot? But please, only spiritual questions. Don't ask any other. If it should be relevant to Swami's teachings and our spiritual upliftment. You may have. What is the question? The question is, what is shared sacrifice? Very simple. If there is some problem in society, everybody must join together to solve it. I'll give you a concrete example. Pardon me, but this is a very relevant example because this is exactly what is happening in America. In America, there are three problems. One is economic inequity. And for the first time in history, a lot of people there are below the poverty line. You wouldn't believe such a thing, but it is true. Second thing is they have a huge budget deficit. That's another problem. Now, there are two major parties, and one party says the rich must be taxed in order to fund social welfare measures. The other party says social welfare measures smacks of socialism and communism, that is meant for Europe, it's not meant for America. The rich should not be taxed because only then they will invest money. So the rich are not prepared to sacrifice. They form a very small minority. And they are refusing to sacrifice for the sake of the nation. And this is in marked contrast with what President Kennedy said in his inaugural letters barely 50 years ago, 1961 or 62, when he became the president. His last sentence was, ask not what America can do for you, ask what you can do for America. So there is no sense of shared sacrifice. Tyaga, everybody must do. The one who has more must do. And let me mention, I heard a very astounding statement by an average American. He said after graduation, he was wondering what he should do. Then he said, I got so much from society, let me work for society. That's the spirit of shared sacrifice. And in the Bible it is said, I am my brother's keeper. You had a question, sir. Somebody here had a question. The question is, would I share one of my personal experiences? See, this is what happens. We get sidetracked into experiences. There is a big experience industry. Today, I want to talk about problem solving. And that is really what our focus should be.
Sir, isn't the amount of philanthropy undertaken by rich Americans a reason for shared sacrifice compared to India? It doesn't happen that way in India.
Our friend has asked a question. The Americans donate more to charity than Indians do. Actually, the Americans are not donating that much to charity now as earlier. If you go several years earlier, right here, Swami talked about Rockefeller, not the John Rockefeller who founded the University of Chicago. He talked about him. Andrew Carnegie was a very rich man. In Pittsburgh, he made a lot of money out of steel making. He said, I am not going to leave anything for my children. I am going to give it to society. He did a lot of endowments. That attitude is now coming down. Not everyone. Warren Buffett is an exception to that. Bill Gates, he very emphatically said, I have heard him say that, our company could not exist in the middle of Sahara Desert. We are able to make money because we get so many benefits from the society. Where do our employees come from? They come from the universities. Society is running the universities. Our salesmen fly. Who runs the airlines? It is the public. It is the society. Maybe company, but whatever it is. Our salesmen drive on highways. Who built the highways? It's the public that built the highways. So he is very clear about that. And he gives a law. He established 1,000 scholarships for people with handicap and backward communities, whatever they call them there, to come up. That, you know, he says, I'm going to share my wealth with you, with very positive, what you call, actions, all over the place. I think we must give them a chance, otherwise there is a question somewhere there. There's a thing.
Sai Ram, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
Sir, in the morning we were discussing about teenagers and adolescents, especially children of devotees,
yes,
how they should be involved in Swami's activities. Your thoughts, sir, on effective parenting for parents with teenagers and adolescents. How can we, address this problem?
So I asked for tough questions and I am getting a tough question. This is more than a bumper. Okay, this is like facing a bumper with just a county cap, which is what Sunil Gavaskar used to do. Now, it's a very important question. The problem is acute in today's environment where the children are being bombarded with the media. And what one has to do is to first win the confidence of the child without talking down to the child. And then make it a sort of an interesting dialogue where the child is sort of very subtly asked to make options and tempted to make the right choice. If you talk down, you're going to lose it, lose the battle. And another very important thing is very early, you give them some alternative to the standard attractions. For example, there are many things that come to us free. We don't look at it. You know, just a few days ago, in the western sky, there were two planets. As somebody said in the American radio, they were doing a dance. Jupiter and Venus. And I was watching it every day. It was changing its position. Then said on 25th of March, you see the rising moon. It'll come. And there are thousands of things in nature which can attract children. No, we must try to engage them in that, and once they get hooked on that at a very early age, they will not be tempted by other attractions. So it is up to us to guide them at an early age and not let the problem go. Once you allow the weeds to grow, then it will become a tough job. But if at the early age we give them time, we give them quality time and guide them properly, and treat them gently, not like talking down, you shall do this, you shall do that, then they will learn very fast and they will come to you with various solutions for your problems. I can assure you that. It's a very delicate thing. It becomes easier when four or five families join together and their children come together. So there is a critical mass triggering and all that. But this is an issue that needs to be addressed. And this is extremely important because a royal commission in England went into the issue of girl gangs. I had never heard of girl gangs. 12, 13-year-old girls had formed gangs. They were violent. They were attacking with knives. A royal commission was appointed by the British government. And then they found there was a lack of communication at home. That was the starting point of the trouble. It is very serious. So individual neglect in the individual small families can lead to a national problem. Any other question on that side? A different one, please, because I can't go on facing bouncers.
This is Sucharita from Maharashtra. And my question is, I would like some guidelines from you on, for youth who have to maintain a balance between spiritual life and materialistic life. Especially, I would make it more personal. I've been working for some time, and now for the past 2 years I'm entirely into seva. But sometimes there is a need of even money for doing seva. So how do you achieve that balance?
It is a very clever googly. But luckily, at this course that I heard just yesterday while waiting for the All India President to pick me up, Swami gave the answer. You see, you are making a division between spiritual things and material things. In the discourse that I heard, Swami began by saying, Ruchit Desai, I hope he is not here. I had been asked to speak before Swami. Ruchit posed three questions. Who is God? What is God? And where is God? Swami's answer is, there is only God, everything is God, and He is everywhere. Now you may say, what has that got to do with my problem? The answer is the following. Don't compartmentalize this as spiritual and that as material. I can do a material thing like cutting wood, but if I utter one word, Krishnarpanam, it becomes God's work. So all I have to do is to make sure I don't do anything hanky-panky. No adharma. It must be dharma. But all work becomes God's work. Including feeding your child, that is God's work. Washing your clothes, that is God's work. Mowing the lawn, that is God's work. Because that lawn belongs to God. Doing carpentry, is doing a repair, anything you do is God's work. If you take that attitude, this problem disappears. Just elevate the whole issue, the problem is solved. There is no need for you to maintain two accounts. One account is enough. No income tax problems. I would like to just add a footnote to this ceiling on desires. It is not just a question of economics and family values. See, desire will draw us away from God. Life is given to us to journey towards God. So we have to ask ourselves, do we want to go near Him, or is it only Naam Kevaste, we just say, Swami, Swami, I love you and all that. If you are really serious about it, then we have to curb worldly attachments so that does not detain us. This does not mean that you stop doing certain things. And the classic example is Janaka. Janaka ruled an empire. He wore a crown. He sat on the throne, but he was not attached to it. If you want, I can throw it out and walk out. So Swami is very clear about it. Being attached is different from actually craving for it. He is not craving. He never craved for it. So if you are forced to do a big job, do it. I do it for Swami. I do it for God. Because He has given me the appointment and I do the job. It can be a president's job, it can be Secretary General of the United Nations. But I don't crave for it. So that is the real meaning of ceiling on desires. No craving. If it is not there, chalo, I'll walk. I don't care. President Harry Truman did that. When he stepped down from the presidentship, he said, I don't want anybody. I know how to go back to my place, Independence, Missouri. God told, honey, get into the car, and he drove. He stopped in gas station, filled gas with his own money and drove back. He was a very, what you call, independent fellow. And he did that. I don't need this government. I don't need, say, I used to drive before, I drive go. That is, you know, what you call detachment.
Sairam, we were attached, so much attached with the physical presence of Swami. And His presence and His nearness was strong motivators for doing more of His activities.
Yes.
And we believe that when we did good service in our places and go back to Puttaparthi for darshan, or when we do our Prashanti Seva more sincerely, Swami used to come closer and Swami used to show more love to us, so much affection to us. And that was strong motivators for us. But now we feel a vacuum there, and how to bridge the gaps.
Well, you know, if you are a school student or this thing, you don't stay in the first standard forever. You would like to go to second standard, third standard and all that. You did all that for a quid pro quo. You wanted to come to Puttaparthi and get Swami to call you for interview, pat you, give you vibhuti, all sorts of things. A child gets that attention from the mother. Tell me which mother will carry a 25-year-old man on her shoulder, this thing. After a while she will say, get lost, you take care of it. So, you know, we have to grow up. We can't be babies forever. In the spiritual world too, that applies. I'm sorry, but I didn't write the rule book, so don't... this is all about divinely ordained.
Sir, in the modern day,
yeah,
There is a lot of frustration in terms of whatever we see around us.
Yes.
Especially the large-scale corruption which is so rampant.
Yes.
And all the vices that have taken shape now.
Yes.
And Swami has always been giving a big hope, saying the students will take forward the message.
Yes.
And they will be the leaders who will rule the world.
Yes.
And they are the biggest hope for all of us.
Yes.
Being in the organization and not having been fortunate to be a student of Swami.
Yes.
There is an intense craving to look at the day when the students will actually lead us from the front.
Yes.
It is happening in some measure, but somewhere I think we are not able to integrate them fully into the organization. My question essentially, sir, is there something wrong that the organization is doing to harmoniously integrate the students and alumni into mainframe activities? Is there a step-by-step approach that you can suggest which we would rigidly and religiously follow to get them in fully?
Okay, sir. I will start by trying to abolish the distinction that you make between alumni and a member of the organization, for the simple reason the alumni, as Swami used to say, are students of the university. Anybody can be a student of Swami. So the moment I say you think in terms of student of Swami, this artificial distinction between an alumnus and somebody like you who did not study disappears. There is absolutely no need for you to feel any inferiority complex. On the other hand, if you follow the commands of Swami, then you may be better than many of the alumni. For example, he mentioned too, you can certainly excel them. Okay, so let us set that aside. In the world of Swami, this alumni is a very local material distinction, technical distinction. So please don't feel yourself. Anybody becomes a bhakta of Swami, provided you fulfill the conditions which he has given in the 12th chapter. So that is what we have to do. Another very important thing, which you have indirectly raised, but which I wanted to pointedly address, is Swami is the first avatar that has sort of collectivized devotion. In the Indian tradition, bhakti is an individual experience. But he democratized it and said, all of you join together and work together. Because collective action alone is the panacea for today's evils. One man cannot go and fight. It will be Don Quixote fighting the windmills. But if 10,000 people raise the cry for Dharma, it will be loud. People will sit up and listen to it. It happens in societies. It has happened in the past, it's happening even now. So what we have to really do is how to make our voice heard loudly. Doesn't mean you go and scream in the media. Actions become the voice. If our actions speak for us, then society will have to sit up and take notice. Let me just make the point like as follows. At the time Swami left us, all sorts of things were said. Very few people talked about what he did. I was appalled to find that the Telegraph in London wrote about his Anantapur project as an extravagant largesse. I went and looked up the dictionary for the meaning of the word extravagant largesse. That fellow had no business to write a thing like that sitting in London. It was patronizing, condescending, absolutely arrogant, impertinent. He doesn't know the problems of these people. Swami has carried water on his shoulder. Nobody knows about it. We don't talk about that. People ask me to talk about my experience. I would like rather that people ask me to talk about Swami's experiences, because they are the message for the world. So we really are not doing enough to tell the world about what Swami has done, what his teachings are, how relevant they are. We have to pay attention to it, but that calls for some more interaction. We will do it later. But right now, since you bowled the ball to two batsmen, over to the other batsmen.
I think as far as the alumni, you know, there was no structure for alumni association, which we wanted to create actually. I think just a couple of months they approached me and wanted to find out whether they can have a structured association. I was told by Satyajit that 2008 itself Swami had mentioned there should be an alumni association. It also mentioned four names who can be on the steering committee of the alumni association. He gave the names also. Then I don't know why it was not taken up, because they wanted to have some organization wherein they can have discussion and they can come out with some proposals, how can they can become more active. in different matters, not only just university matter, but maybe in other matters in which Satya Sai organizations are interested. So therefore now we have the structure, right? Now they have to register the body actually with the president, the secretary and so on. So another thing is Swami also wanted the primary school, those who passed out from primary school, also earlier school in Ooty, and even those children to be taken in, that is Sai children. So, but there are some problem for us because you'll see that university cannot absorb them as alumni. So therefore we decided to have the general Sai children and the higher education wing and others. So we are involving all of them together. Now I think we are going to have the structure. Recently during my visit to USA, they were also very keen about it. They wanted that to be registered very quickly. So that I think it will be done, and I'm sure they are going to participate in all the activities of Swami's organizations.
Before you ask the question, I just want to add a supplementary note. I said something and it might appear that the Vice Chancellor is saying something else. No. It is necessary in the world to have formal bodies. After all, we have in the Sai Samsthan, many organizations. You have the organization, you have the university, you have the school, you have the hospital, you have the central trust and all that. These are what you call functional differences. But organically we are still one. So alumni have a role to play by virtue of the fact that all over the world, every university has alumni association. So there is nothing to prevent our university from having that. That is a legitimate thing. They have the mother and child's special association. But when it comes to Swami, all are one. That also we must keep. So we should not sort of nitpick and quibble over small differences. Administratively, we have to. After all, Haryana is different from Punjab. Punjab is different from, Tamil Nadu and so on. These are necessary. But we should not overstress the differences. We must know how to get along. Yes, Jasinder.
So coming back to what Shalabh raised earlier, you were expounding on shared development.
Shared sacrifice.
Shared sacrifice or, leading up to shared development.
Correct.
Now, while we see an example in the United States where we had Rockefellers and others who did large charities, what we are seeing now in India as well, we are supposed to have ancient tradition behind us and have a dharmic way of life. But what you find with large corporate houses now in India as well is that, yes, they are doing CSR activity, but they are not doing CSR activity in the sense that they are setting up their own foundations, and in self-glorification they are doing projects. Looking at all of this, where are we really heading, and what direction should we really give to our lives, keeping in view Swami's teachings? While this degradation has dawned on United States, it's also seeping very quickly into our fabric as well. That's my point.
Your point is well taken. The question is, the rich in India have discovered wealth very recently, and so they are acting like what the French call nowhere rich, new rich. So they are trying to, have a ball, as they say. So where do we stand? How do we go around? I tell you, these rich people are very poor. They are poor in love. They are poor in sacrifice. And those are the two things that we have in abundance, if you choose to. What was Swami at the human level? When he came to Prashanthi Nilayam on 23rd November 1950, that was literally in the middle of nowhere. But he had already said, I am going to do this, do that, do that. And he told his brother, you will live to see. He didn't say you will live. It is going to happen. My glory will spread. It will be seen. At the human level, how do you expect a 14-year-old high school dropout to do the fantastic things that he did, which all of you have heard of? What was the capital? He never went on any fundraising tours. He never stretched his hand. He always said, this is the hand that gives, this is never the hand that asks. How did he do it? He threw selfless love left and right. He literally sort of showered it on us. We were bathed with it. And we had no option but to surrender to him. And his love made us do this. He did that very early on. I'll give you an example. Not many people know this. 1953, he laid the foundation stone. If I'm not mistaken, 1953, he laid the foundation stone 54, is it, for general, 54, 23rd November, 4 years after coming to Prashant Line, for the general hospital. The general hospital was built mostly on voluntary labor. People would come, and it was on a terrace, and they had to send bricks, sand, mortar, everything. They formed a bucket brigade, and Swami would go up and down talking to them, giving them fruits, panagam, as you call, juice. And on moonlight night, there is no electricity there. So he'll say, come on, work now. And he will talk to them. And through his love, he made them work. And from day, it was inaugurated in 1956. From day one, its superintendent has served in an honorary capacity. Swami's university started in 1981. From day one, every single vice chancellor, including our current vice chancellor, works in a voluntary capacity. We don't draw a single paisa salary. How does that happen? Can you show me one university in this entire country where that happens? So there is the magic of love. There is the power of love. As somebody said, it was found in a graffiti in a school in America. The power of love can do anything if people give up the love for power. So we are caught up in that trap. And what we have to do is we have to set up an example of sacrifice. And that can really catch on. The Peace Corps did that. Peace Corps did that. Can we do that? Our organization is bigger than the, better than the Peace Corps because it has a spiritual basis. We have to activate that and make love come up. Then it will just sweep out everything in front of it. So that is the responsibility ahead of us. There seems to be a question. So she has already got the mic and she has the advantage. But you register yourself with the mic. Get hold of the mic. Oh yes, it's on.
Yes. Sir, if your job is very demanding and
yes.
Persons working under you, they are not up to the mark, that is not efficient enough,
yes.
That creates lots of stress on you. So how to tackle with this kind of stress?
This is a really tough question. Your job is very demanding and the people under you are not up to the mark. There is no what I would call ready-made fix-it solution. But the real point is that if there is an ambience of what you call energetic action, overpowering energetic action, then these underperformers will simply not exist. They will not survive. I'll give you one classic example, two classic examples, particularly one, Germany. I once asked a German scientist, what happens if a fellow comes and doesn't work? He said, what? I don't understand your question. Oh, he comes to the office, he puts his feet on the table and doesn't do anything. He reads the newspaper. You must be joking, he said. He said, no, supposing imagine. It's not possible. It doesn't happen in the country. He said, why? Because if he does that, everybody will laugh at him. He will be looked down upon. So it's a question of the ambient culture. Right now what has happened is the balance has tipped on the other side. If you are somehow able to create that ambience where people enjoy their work and so on and so forth, then this problem will not happen. I believe to some extent that is the ambience in Google, where people come, they enjoy, of course they squeeze them, that's a different story. But the first, in Swami's samsthan, he didn't squeeze. He just let you do, and then with his example, he enthused you, and you felt ashamed if you didn't perform. So we have to handle this delicately. People come from different backgrounds in a complex organization. We have to handle these things very carefully, but it can be done because there are corporations where the whole corporation is bound by a certain ethics and value. Then people fall in line. So it's really a management problem, not the individual problem. That is my submission, but there are other pundits who can correct me.
I don't know, performance, you mean in which organization? I know whether it's an education institution or something like that.
Education.
You know, probably I can just quote, we had an academic and administrative audit in the University of Mysore.
Actually, both combined.
See, I can speak about the education institution because you know, we did perform, we had academic and administrative audit in the University of Mysore. You know, the result was, you know, Professor Anandakrishnan, who is the chairman of the IIT Kanpur governing body, he was the chairperson of that committee with another 8 members. They came out with the conclusion that 1/3 of the faculty are excellent, 1/3 are fairly alright, other 1/3 useless. And finally, that conclusion, the so-called middle, they can be pushed either this way or that way. Other 1/3 we cannot change. That is what he mentioned to me. Probably if you go through the editorial written by Professor Balram recently in Current Science, same thing was done in some of the American universities, and the experience is same again. 1/3, 1/3, 1/3. That applies to all the education institutions in the world. So therefore, we should not worry too much about if there are not performance, we should also accept. There are 5 different types, we have different fingers. Probably we are able to catch up because we have got different, all of them are different. So therefore they have to coexist, we will not get worked up. Probably you can overcome, de-stress yourself by meditating on Swami.
At a practical level, if they can be found some other work which is, for which they are better suited, sometimes, you know, they may be misfit in the positions they are occupying. So by relocating them with the help of HR, this problem can be solved, perhaps. See, we don't have perfect solutions. This is an imperfect world. But what we have to really struggle is to move closer and closer towards perfection. That we have to keep in mind. We are not really talking of, it's not going to be done in a day. We will always have problems. But today should be better than yesterday and tomorrow should be better than today. That's what we should aim at. The slope should be positive, as we say in mathematics. Someone else had a question.
Sir, I'm
Manoj. You are registered with the mic. Please go ahead.
Myself, Manoj Batra. I am from Rajasthan. I am a college lecturer.
Very good.
So I have 2 vice chancellors with me. So I'm
two vice chancellors.
You are the vice chancellor.
I am ex-former, etc.
Yeah. So I am tempted to ask this question. Sir,
don't yield to temptation. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Sir, there are universities in India,
yes,
which are heavily funded by UGC. There are private universities.
UGC doesn't have any money, I say. You got your thing wrong.
If we compare with the Satsai University, okay. Satsai Institute of Higher Learning, one university which doesn't charge a single penny from the students, this Satsai University, I'm talking.
Yes.
But still it's managed to get the highest rating in the NAC. That is, I think, A grading. Present grading is A. A plus no, was previous grading was A plus plus. Now it is A.
3.67
Now they have.
So this is the latest. A, B, and A C. Grading with 3.67. Anyway, what's your question?
So my question is how this university managed to do that, while there are other universities which are charging so much of fees. They are funded by the other UGC, but they don't get this kind of excellence being done in the society. So my question is what is the structure which makes it so excellent?
I think I should pass the mic to the jeweler for the answer. That is the difference. You see, that shows the power of love. So we are not making use of the power of love when he gave the example. We are just not paying attention to it. So we really have to start focusing on that and make people understand that. Okay? That is the short answer. But the long answer is a lot of details, and the devil is always in the details, as the Americans say. But we can't discuss details now. That we can do privately.
Probably I'll share something that happened 3 days back. I was in the advisory committee, attending the advisory committee meeting of NAC, which is the body to assess and accredit. See, in that meeting, one of the professors from JNCSR mentioned that we should find out how the Satya Sai University students perform better than students from any other university in the country, because some of them are working with CNRFs, I think, in that lab, not with CNRF, I don't know. But anyway, that is what he mentioned. So then immediately I had to answer that it is the integral integral education, which was actually provided by Swami, that is the one which is really helping us to bring out such students as well as credibility to the university. I think, as he mentioned, the jeweler, it is great, goes to Swami. We are all instruments, but it goes to Swami.
His rule prevails, and I can't overrule him, even though he works under me. Oh, okay. You asked a question before. No. Sure?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Okay.
Sayam, sir. As we've been delving a lot into the organization's activity in the, throughout the day as well, in the organization's activity, as we've seen throughout the day, there are a lot of more activities that is going to increase in the organization. The mandate of the organization, as we see, is growing day by day. And in that, I sometimes feel and wonder, are we not perhaps missing on the main point that is about the feeling ananda in heart, that sharing that same message to the society and also the sharing the same joy to us? Are we not being more focused on the work that we do and the number of people that we cater to rather than the joy and the ananda aspect of it?
See, you are sort of putting the cart before the horse. If you really do your work properly, you will automatically experience ananda. You don't go and experience ananda separately. That is not what an artist does. Artist paints. It takes him a long time. At the end of it, he experiences ananda, atma tripti. So, if we learn to do karma in the proper way, that Bhagavan taught us in his earlier incarnation as Lord Sri Krishna, then ananda will come to you without you looking for it. Now you want to look at it as a corporate goal. Please don't do that. Get absorbed in your work. Automatically it will come chasing you, unknown to you. That is the famous story of Haridas, as opposed to, what is that guy's name, Tansen, who was the court singer for Akbar. He took him finally. And he realized that he was a bigger singer. Then he asked him, why? Sahab, I sing for you, he sings for him. That is the difference. So ananda will come to you if you work for God. If you think you are working for your CEO, you will be only getting pain and blood pressure. Then you will have to go to some corporate spiritual guru who will tell you how to meditate and then give you a bill, which will again increase your BP.
Sir, I'm having a question.
You grab a mic, I say. Meanwhile, yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Sir, what I feel is that India is best in spirituality.
India's best in spirituality.
Spirituality. We say that we are number one in spirituality.
I don't know who says that. I am not saying that.
Yeah. I mean, but we feel that every second person is...
This is a free country. Everybody can open. Okay, go ahead.
Religious or maybe the spiritual. But when it comes to corruption, again, we are number one. Mm-hmm. So this is really a contradictory thing that at the same time we call that we are a spiritual and at the same time we say we are number one in the corruption.
Yes.
So there is no patriotism.
No, what you are talking about is hypocrisy. It's aspiration. You see, if we, you know what Swami said? Follow your conscience. Your conscience is your master. What we do by talking about religion is we are setting aside conscience. I will quote the scriptures. Devil is very good at quoting the scriptures. And devil is evil. So we quote the scriptures and justify whatever we do. But if I set aside the scriptures and I say I am answerable to my conscience, I don't know what the scriptures say, but conscience, then corruption will disappear. We are not training, we should know, we are not setting the example of answering our conscience. How many people answer their conscience? We are not making it a virtue. We are not making it what you call a desirable quality. Everybody is told, hey, if that fellow asks, say this, as Swami used to say, father will tell the son, if a phone call comes asking for me, tell him I am not at home. So the father is training that son in telling lies. I heard Swami say this very often. So we have to change our value system, our personal value system. Are we doing that in daily life? So this, you know, that's why I talked about micro and macro. The macro will show the problem of the micro. So if individually we start compromising, are ye chalta hai, wo chalta hai, then finished. The whole country will go to dogs.
But this at the same time, Swami only said that the youth should not get into the politics or something. But I mean, I just...
Yeah, I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about values.
How will you change the system? I mean...
First, I want to ask you, how are you going to change yourself? Physician, heal thyself. See,
fine, sir. I mean, like, I just want to share one incident. Like,
yes,
we
please.
Are going to teach students of a physical handicap in the Indore. So what happens is, since 2007, they don't have teachers.
Yes.
So what we are doing is just we are helping them out. Fine. Mm. For 2 years or more, I am there and I will go and I'll teach them. This is my moral responsibility and want them to grow. But the this is not a solution of that problem.
I agree with you.
The system should give them.
I agree with you. No, the system is not going to come out a drop like manna from heaven. I will give you a very interesting example which I heard on the radio about 2 months ago, 1 month ago. This is about a small hospital in a town in western Kansas. The population of that town is just about 2,000 or so. One gas station, one convenience store, and a hospital with 25 beds. Puttaparthi is a big town compared to that town in America. They had a problem with doctors, appointing doctors. Small general hospital with 20 beds. Our Puttaparthi hospital has got 100 beds, if not more. Is it 100? 100. He knows it. They had a problem. They appointed a new hospital administrator. He said, so many American doctors are going and working in Africa and Amazon jungle. Why are they not applying? So he put a very unique kind of advertisement. Wanted doctors who enjoy a challenge and are looking for an opportunity. This is the challenge, to come and work here. He was flooded with all these things and he said, if you come and work here, I will let you go and work for 2 months anywhere in the world. You do your seva there. Our problem is, we have lots of dots when they are not connecting it. This country is full of people like you, but we are not able to bring to them. That is the chemistry that the organization must really provide or create. If we have an umbrella and people see that umbrella, they will flock under it. We are not very visible. That is our problem. That is the organizational issue that we must... If people come under our shelter, your problem will be solved. I am sure in Indore there are many people like you. They don't know about this. There is nobody to give that chavi and trigger. So that is what is lacking. It is not that we are lacking in good people. As Swami used to say, there are plenty of good people. Only they are all hiding from each other. You have to bring them out into the open. And that is the chemistry. Then your problem will be solved. This is how this fellow solved. He just put an advertisement. And he was flooded. Because there are many people in America, even in America. I am sure there are thousands more in India. But we don't know about the opportunity. We have to do that. That's our responsibility.
So in this case, I think there is only one opportunity because it's a government organization. So what we can do is just to intimate the media that there is something Kapla is going on. You come.
No, even word of mouth, you know, if you go to your samiti and tell, and then tell the others, word of mouth can do a lot of wonders. Only thing is, word of mouth is used only for spreading rumors. Mark Twain said, rumor goes round the world before truth has a chance to put on his shoes. This is exactly what Mark Twain said. Rumor goes round the world before truth has a chance to put on shoes. So, the speed of rumor is greater than that of light. Einstein may say whatever he wants, but rumor travels faster. Sairam, sir.
Yes, Sairam, sir.
Oh, you have come to the front. You see, persistence, perseverance, patience.
Sir, I'm from Anand Velu from Tamil Nadu, sir. Anand Velu from Tamil Nadu.
Anand Velu.
When I was a student, my guru said he was giving so many lectures. I said, you just tell me something which is very easy to follow. He said, you do Namasmarna. So we have been trying to do that. And there was an incident in my life which happened, but I had to get a result. Even I was thinking, if I get a chance to ask Swami, I think it is the right chance I can ask you. The thing is, when I was doing Namasmarna, it was a thing. There was a bus accident when I was in 10th standard. Myself and my sister, everybody has been saved. And in the same bus, around more than 4 to 5 persons dead. And I asked the guru, sir, you said if I do Namasmarna, nothing will happen in and around me. And I am safe, my sister families are safe. What happened to other 4? And then what is the power of the Namasmarna? Is it you are safe and your sister is safe, that is sufficient. But mind is not convincing. If you do Namasmarna, nothing will happen in and around you. And what will be the result from our end?
Well, I put in a real corner. So, I will, but I am good at, you know, deflecting the ball. Let me tell you something about Namasmarna. This is something you would like hearing. This I heard from an elderly gentleman who used to work in our university. Many years ago, Swami went to Hyderabad. He was staying in Shivam. This gentleman went to Hyderabad and he went very early because he was connected with the university. He had access to the inner sanctorum. And there was Kamavadani chanting Rudram. Why? Because Swami was taking his bath. Shiva is having Abhishekam, so he was chanting Rudram. Swami came out and then this gentleman said, Swami asked, when did you come and all this thing. And this gentleman said, Swami, I don't know Vedas, this man was chanting and I wish I could have chanted along with him when you were having your bath and all that. Swami looked at Kamavadani and asked in Telugu, Kamavadani, is there anything superior to the Vedas? Kamavadani said, Swami, what are you talking? What are you saying? Is there anything superior to your Nama? So, he was essentially making that man tell this man, there is nothing greater than Namasmaranam. And on one occasion, Swami put it very interestingly, I think here. He said, if you go to a doctor, what does he do? He gives you medicine. Then he prescribes diet restrictions. In Ayurveda, you use the word aushadam, aushadam for medicine. Diet restriction is patyam. Swami said, God is the ultimate doctor. He also gives aushadam and he recommends patyam. What is aushadam? Namasmarana. What is patyam? Follow what I say. Now, in answer to your question, your namasmarana is about B+. If it had been A+, lot more would have been saved. That is my explanation. Keep improving. There is hope for improvement. Thank you.
Sir,
you better look at the clock. Okay.
Sir, today whole day we have been hearing about how we can contribute to his mission and improvise the quality and quantity of our seva. My question is from a very individual perspective.
Yes, ma'am.
Given we have been noticing that many a time is the same faces who are there in different fields of seva, even in the Sathya Sai organization. Given this aspect, how do we manage our time, our energy, our physical, mental, emotional energies and our relationships to sustain a more joyful and inspiring seva?
This is a tough question. You see, first and foremost, we must learn to associate the word seva as service to God. Seva is not necessarily or exclusively an activity of the organization. Organization is just one channel for seva. What is it that we learn from the story of Pundalika? Mother is God, father is God. He put Krishna on waiting hold and said, you better wait, I have to do this. He was saying God and mother, that drama was enacted by Krishna just to stress the fact that see God in your parent and serve. So, the moment you stop, this making this distinction between this seva and that seva, and also pay attention to the fact that Swami said, I am not interested in quantity but quality. Your problem is solved. So you are trying to, like the corporate sector, you must have a turnover of this one. Salesman, you must sell 500 cars in your district, otherwise you are fired. God doesn't fire anybody. He gives more chance. He will excuse you if you fail, but he wants you to try. He wants you to just love. So don't quantify seva. Don't compartmentalize seva. Just do what is natural. He doesn't expect too much from everybody. There are people who are supposed to do more. There are people who are supposed... He is very satisfied. That's what the story about the squirrel tells in the Ramayana. What on earth did the squirrel do? It just moved a pebble. But Rama says, this is just as good, like what the others do. So with God, these kind of quantitative... He is not quantitative. He is qualitative. That is very good for us.
Yeah. Sai Ram, sir, my question is related to educational scenario of our country. I quote Professor C.N.R. Rao. He has said this in two different occasions. One... in India, we don't have education system, we do have examination system.
Yes.
And second, our science education is on deathbed.
Yes.
Okay. So now, see, we have to send our children to the same education system. If we ask for something more, we can't get because the system, we have to continue with that. But at the same time, if we want to inculcate, a fervor, an inclination towards the science and towards nature rather, through grandma remedies, something that we can try at home, you know, by giving qualitative time. Can you suggest some techniques or some approach so that, you know, we can develop this creativity, innovative ability?
Look, you put everything into the melting pot, from CNR Rao to grandma. I think I need to have a talk with you privately for discussing this. Your point may be valid, but you know, it's a complex question, so let's settle it outside privately. I'm not trying to put you down. I would be very interested in. Just for the record, let me say, the problem with education is much more than what Professor CNR Rao has diagnosed. The problem with education is it has not recognized that the end of education is character. That is the fundamental problem of education in this country. And until we fix that, we don't have to worry about other things. First, let us get that straight. Then the science will follow automatically. And I am a scientist, so I can speak with authority.
Sairam, my name is Prajit. I come from Bangalore.
Your name is again?
My name is Prajit, sir.
Prajit, okay. Yeah. Sorry, I couldn't hear.
Yeah. Sir, of late, we have been seeing so many of these emails and experiences that come onto the net, which invariably hit our inboxes saying, Swami appeared in flesh and blood in some place. And then, letters are coming in the altar of some home. And, it's being propagated.
Okay.
That's one. And you said that rumors travel faster than truth. How in Radio Sai have you received such queries to authenticate the same? Because I personally have sent a couple of requests to our brothers who work in the radio to confirm if it's truth before I could actually spread it on.
Confirm what is true.
If any such experience has hit them, is it authentic? Can we propagate? Because what I have heard is our relationship with Swami is very heart to heart.
Yes.
So if somebody else experiences Swami in flesh and blood and then he says, look, I saw Swami here, or I got this letter in the form of, in Swami's handwriting, how are we to deal with it? Because there are so many newcomers coming to see Swami after the, I wouldn't know if it's after the India Today or if it's just after Swami's lifetime. And this number of sharing experiences has increased after Swami's physical lifetime. We have never heard of this before.
First I will answer, and then the Vice Chancellor also has got his own say. I would like to say, we are creating this industry. We are creating this industry. I will mention one incident which happened here many, many years ago. A certain gentleman talked about one of these experiences. He had gone from here, he had gone to Canada, he suddenly fell ill, and he was in the nursing home. Midnight, he was having all problems, there was not even a duty nurse. He cried, Swami, Swami, save me, save me. Swami supposed to have appeared, made him all right, and next day the nurse was surprised, he was cured. Okay, the man spoke, everybody clapped, wonderful experience. Then this man asked, Swami, you are here in Vrindavan, how did you go there? And Swami said, you seem to have a very low opinion of God. Man speaks, I still remember, I was sitting there, and I was enjoying it, because this is a real problem. He said bluntly, you seem to have a very low opinion of God. Man speaks in Washington, you are able to see him in your drawing room. If man can do that, do you mean to say, God who created heaven and earth cannot do this? So we sing Brahmanda Nayaka, and we talk about very small aspects of Swami. Lot of this is to get attention. Let us not trivialize Swami by talking about this so-called Swami appeared in there. He jolly well can. As he said, I am everywhere. Whoever calls me, I will appear there. I don't travel from here to there. If you really feel in your heart, I can appear. What we have to really worry about is his appearing here. He is actually there, but we are shutting the door. We are not looking at this. We are looking at emails for X to say he appeared in my house and all that. It is very natural for him, Sagajam. Let us not treat it as out of the ordinary or a miracle. He can do anything. What I would like to pay attention to is the sacrifices he did in the human form. Do you know that at the time of the Anantapur project, drinking water project, he mortgaged this property? We worship him as Lakshmi, he is wealth. Why did he have to do it? To set an example to us. When you fellows face a stumbling block, don't give up. He could have easily got some fellow from somewhere to write a check for 500 crores, he could have done it. He actually mortgaged this property. That is all part of the Leela to educate us. Jarasandha attacked Mathura 18 times. Krishna could have just blown him. But he retreated to Dwaraka. Why? Somebody else had to do that job. So, you know, let us focus more on the message. By spending more time on these experiences, we are spending less time on the message. That God incarnates for the purpose of giving a message. Unless I know the message, I cannot live his message. That is my message to you, and with that I pass the mic.